Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we return. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche here in the United States. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right, an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution here in the United States. Now, there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties for the violation of those laws, and the 33 articulable benefits that you receive for observing those commandments and those laws. You know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to a law is to suffer its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Nature's Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. You want to do it right now before you forget. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Okay, this week we've been talking about natural disasters, and I led you down the path here, and I said, well, let's take a look at natural disasters, and they come in three forms. So let's take a look at natural disasters and just how natural are they, and I think we've come to the conclusion that natural disasters are anything but natural. They're totally abnormal. They're a curse. Then I said, well, where does this curse come from? And I led you a little bit further, and I said, hey, listen, isn't this curse coming directly from God Almighty, the God of Abraham, in the Bible? And I showed you Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 and the Ten Commandments. And I said, hey, listen, here's a guy that gets real jealous, gets furious, says he's got a covenant over here, and the personal pronoun I appears 20 times in Leviticus 26, and he says, here's what I'm going to do to you. So let's give credit where credit's due. God says, I'm the one that's doing this to you. And we say, no, these are natural calamities. They just happen in cyclical cycles based upon evolution. Don't have anything to do with God. And that's why I said, God just can't get no respect, no how, can he? He comes in here and says, here's what I'm going to do. He does it, and he says, I'm doing it 20 times in the first person. And we say, no, that isn't God. That's just time and chance. Then last time, I showed you how the scientists have declared war against God. Well, it's their words. They said, scientists stand united against natural disasters. If, in fact, these natural disasters, as we call them, are in fact punishments and penalties from God, then the scientists and the professors in the universities and the government officials at FEMA, the Congress, and the President of the United States are standing in opposition to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they're saying, in effect, that God, if you send this hurricane, we're not going to recognize it as coming from you. We're going to call it a natural disaster, a phenomenon of nature, whatever nature is, and we are going to rebuild no matter what the cost. That's your president. That's what he said. Of course, he can say that because he's spending your money. As long as, you know, I could say that too. If I was spending your money, if I was spending my money, I'd think about building somewhere else other than Biloxi. And I said, I'm not really too sure that we're as innocent as we like to think we are. And so I said, now this time, on this last program in the series, I'm going to take you through a series of laws, and I'm going to point out with specificity some of the violations that we're involved with for which we are being punished. And then if you want to make a change, well, that's your choice in life. I'm not an evangelist. I'm not here to tell you to pray. Give your heart to Jesus. Come down the primrose path and send your tithes to George. I don't take people's tithes, and I don't run a church. I'm not a priest, a prophet, and I'm not a preacher. I'm a plumber by trade and a general contractor by profession. I'm a farmer. I'm not brain dead yet. I might be an old fart, but I'm not dead yet, and my brain still functions. And when I read these stories and articles that come across my desk, you know, I kind of evaluate them, just like a truck driver sits down in the truck stop, and he picks up the paper, and he reads the story, and he puts an evaluation on it. From his experience in life, you know, he says, that makes sense to me, or that's stupid. And that's what I do, and that's what you do, that's what we all do. Now, if you get bad information, or if you're ignorant and don't have information that you need to come to a rational conclusion, you're probably going to come up with a wrong decision. It's my contention that the preachers and the politicians have given us some bad information, and we've come to some poor conclusions. Now, in this article, it goes on to say, scientists stand united against natural disasters. They go on to say, we cannot actually stop hurricanes or tsunamis or other extremes of nature. But if we bring together the right mix of research, work that integrates such disciplines as engineering, climate, health, and social sciences, and find a better way to plug these insights into the public policy-making process, we can avoid a lot of unnecessarily human and economic losses, he said in a statement. He's got a point there. We could have gone down there to New Orleans and built those dikes and levees to withstand a Hurricane 5, and maybe we could have done that for $15 billion and saved $500 billion. But what if God sent you a hurricane that velocity 6, 7, or 8, did it ever occur to you that maybe the bigger and the heavier duty you build it, the bigger and the heavier duty God will send the hurricane to destroy it? I mean, if you're dealing with a God here, rather than just natural selection and wild off-the-wall chance, I mean, you might be dealing with a guy here that's got more power than you've got. There's a story that goes along that line. There was a fellow that was pretty powerful. He was called the Pharaoh in Egypt. He had control, ownership, and possession of 3 million slaves, and Moses blew into town one day, walked into the Pharaoh's office, and said, hey, chump, let my people go. I got this word from God. Pharaoh was a religious man. He had a god named Amun-Ra. And he said, no, Moses, my God is more powerful than your God, and I ain't letting him go. And there was a contest that ensued over a period of months. And when it was all said and done, Egypt lay in ruins. The Egyptian army was destroyed in the Red Sea, and the firstborn of every household in Egypt had been killed. Now, do we Americans, Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, and Englishmen need to go through that same experience and reinvent the wheel? Reinvent the wheel here to figure out that maybe we got to change our lifestyle. I just throw that out for your consideration. They go on to say McBean said that the goal of the initiative presented to the ICSU and their members at their 28th General Assembly in Suzhou, China, is to provide a strong scientific basis for reducing the risks and consequences of natural and human-induced environmental hazards. Wait a minute here, boys and girls. If you've got natural, and these naturals are caused by this guy that calls himself God, and who's going to deliver you out of my hand? I'm just raising the question. Are you really sure you want to take this guy on? Are you really sure you want to give this God the finger and say kiss off? My common sense says that, hey, you know, if I walked up to the Red Sea and I'm looking at two walls of water and I'm watching a bunch of people walk across there on dry ground, and those walls of water are standing 110 feet high, and in front of me, I see a pillar of fire and a cloud. You know, my conclusion would be, boys, I think we're dealing with something here that we ain't never seen before. Boys, maybe we better back off. Boys and girls, maybe we better sit down, shut up, and fold our hands. This is something that's probably a lot bigger than anything that we faced in the past. It's bigger than anything that we know how to handle. I think that would be my conclusion. I know that would be my advice. Pharaoh, I don't know who his advisors were, Pharaoh said, after them, bring them back. You know, my conclusion is, if you're dealing with a God over here who's tough enough, smart enough, wise enough, and has the capacity to divide the ocean, that sucker's probably got a couple of other tricks up his sleeves that maybe we ain't never heard of before. Like maybe he could collapse that wall of water and drown us all down in there. I don't think Pharaoh thunk that out very well. He said, after him, bring him back. Well, anyway, that's what Cecil B. DeMille told us. I saw the picture of the Exodus two or three times. Now, the scoping group's report on natural hazards launched at the conference makes it clear that recent disasters in the United States and Asia are not anomalies, but are in fact part of a long-term and dramatic increase in natural disasters. Between 1900 and 2000, recorded natural disasters rose from 100 to 2,800 per decade, with most of the events being weather-related. The report notes that natural hazards now kill, injure, or displace millions every year and cause great economic loss. In 2004, natural disasters caused $117 billion in damage. The events in 2005 appear likely to dwarf that number. You got that? Now, natural disasters went from 100 from the decade of 1900 to 1910 to 2800 in the decade from 1990 to 2000. Hey, boys and girls, that's a pretty significant change. You think that's natural? You think that just happened? Or do you think maybe somebody's causing that to happen? You suppose somebody's sending us a message? Now, in the book of Revelation, God says, I'm going to send all these plagues upon you people down there, but you're not going to listen. What you're going to do is curse God and continue on with this insanity. Well, okay. I'm not going to change 300 million Americans. I'm not going to change you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders. You people are all adults. You're going to live your lives, but I wanted to suggest to you that you might consider that when these events transpire, instead of cursing God, you might say, hey, boys and girls, maybe it's time to reconsider. Time to reconsider. Let me give you one more piece of advice. Doesn't come from me now. Comes from God himself. So doesn't come from little Georgie. Comes from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Over here in Leviticus 26, he comes to about verse... about verse 38. He says, and you shall perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up. And they that are left of you shall pine away in their iniquity in your enemies' lands. Now, for you to pine away in your enemy's lands, you're going to have to be invaded and conquered and deported. Yeah, that's another one of the side effects of violation of this law produces. It's going to produce national collapse, economic collapse, total impoverishment, national invasion, capture, and deportation. And then there will be some survivors. They're not going to kill all of you. They're going to kill most of you. Okay, now here's the bottom line. He says, in your enemy's lands and also in the iniquities of their fathers shall they pine away with them. So you and your fathers are going into national captivity. In verse 40 he says, if they shall confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers with their trespass, which they have trespassed against me, and that also they have walked contrary to me, and that also I have walked contrary unto them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies, if then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and they then accept of the punishment of their iniquity, then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham, and I also will remember the land. The land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths while she lies desolate without them, and they shall accept of the punishment of their iniquity, because even because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. So if you're one of those that despises God's statutes, His laws, and you end up in national captivity, assuming that you're one of the survivors. I mean, if you're dead, you don't need to be concerned about it. You can go bitch at God in the second resurrection. But if you're still alive, if you humbled yourself, instead of giving Him the finger and saying, I will not repent, I will not change, if you accept of your punishment, He will remember you and He will relieve you of that punishment. Well, that's what He just told you there. Now, He may be lying to you. Maybe you can't believe Him. But when this happens to you, you remember this program. You remember this broadcast. You remember, oh, yeah, I remember that crazy lunatic Gordon told me that God was going to kick my hiney. And then if when all these things come to pass. Now, I got to tell you a little story. I was watching TV the other night, and there was an old man down, I think it was Biloxi, Mississippi, or Gulfport. He's there along the beach. And he was standing on the concrete slab of his house. Everything's washed away. So it's just the concrete slab. And he's being interviewed by one of the reporters, you know, on CBS Evening News or somebody. And he said, how does all this make you feel? And the old man said, everything that I have worked for all of my life was right here in my home. My entire life's work is right here in my home. And he said, you are standing right now in my dining room. And right over here was the living room. And he walked over to the living room. And he says, it's all gone. Now, if there's a time to cry, that's it right there. I sat there and I watched that old man and I said, you know, but by the grace of God, there be I, standing in the wreckage of my life's work. And this old man's life's work has been swept away. Now, the old man doesn't see himself as being a particularly bad guy. In reading the Bible, you know, the people in Egypt in Moses' day, they didn't see themselves as being bad people. I'm sure that Pharaoh saw himself as just as righteous as George Bush. But you know, the God of Moses saw Pharaoh in a different light. And he saw the Egyptians in a different mold. Now, if you want to be one of the Egyptians and worship the gods of the Egyptians, you know, that's your choice to make. If you want to worship the gods of the Muslims, you know, that's your choice to make. If you want to be a pig-eating Christian and worship the gods of the Christians, hey, listen. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But when you're standing on the slab of your entire life's work, which has been swept away, you got to ask yourself, where in the hell was my God when the chips were down and I really needed them. And I'm sure Pharaoh should have been asking that same question. You know, where is the god Amun-Re when we went after those Israelites down in the Red Sea with those two walls of water? Where was our God? Then ask yourself, hey, have I got the right God here? Maybe the God that I've been worshiping, maybe the God that I've been serving, maybe the God of the United States, maybe the God of FEMA ain't as powerful as I thought they were. And they cost you a lot more money. I was doing a little research here the other day. Do you know what you people are paying in the way of taxes? Your Social Security tax is 16%. Your income tax is 17%. That's a third of everything that you create and produce that you're paying to your God, the United States, and the state of California. Listen, this God, the God of Abraham, he just takes 10%. Now, I don't get out of here scot-free. I got to pay my income tax just like you do. But instead of paying 33%, I'm only paying 10%. Now, that's a 23% savings, and I say that that makes more sense. Furthermore, it's true that I don't have FEMA to rely upon. But the God that I serve didn't blow my house down. And furthermore, he said, I won't blow your house down, Gordon, as long as you obey me and keep my commandments. But Gordon, if you give me the finger, I'm going to eat your lunch. So I looked at that and I said, you know, maybe I better not give this guy the finger. Seeing how he gets furious and he's a jealous God. And he's told me many, many times, 20 times, he said, no, I'm going to punish you 7 times more for your sins. That's why I said in this program, I'm going to, with specificity, I want to identify some of these crimes over here that we're all engaged in, or have been engaged in past tense. And that maybe we would do better if we would simply stop practicing Mardi Gras. Now, the other day, I was watching Rose right after Katrina. And this reporter asked this woman, he said, could this interfere with Mardi Gras here in New Orleans? And this lady said, horse feathers, there will be Mardi Gras. Well, that just tells you that Hurricane Katrina hadn't straightened that lady out. She hadn't got her brain functioning yet. But what about a second or a third or a fifth Katrina? Now listen, boys and girls, if you have your house burned down, you can survive that. I remember our family, our house burned down in Corbell, California. We lost everything. I shouldn't say lost everything. There were a few pictures in there that we got. I mean, the next day I woke up, all I had was the clothes on my back. Gutted her house. And I was starting to wear clothes that were donated, you know, clothes that were way too big, you know. And I was going to school wearing shirts, you know, that belonged to fifth graders. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And the clothes that used to fit me all of a sudden, you know, people were donating clothes. And we were very, very grateful to those people that donated those clothes. So don't think now that I'm making fun of the people, but, you know, they've got a kid in the fifth grade, and they look at the Gordons, and the Gordons' house burned down, and they need clothes, and so they gave us clothes that fit a fifth grader, and I was in the first grade. I mean, those clothes fit. You could have poured me in them twice. And we were glad to get whatever we could get. And we survived that fire, and we rebuilt, and we lived our lives. Now picture this. What would happen if my house burned down every year, 5 years in a row? Could you recover from that? And you know, boys and girls, that's precisely what these scientists are telling you here. Let me show you a little piece of another article over here, the unequal burden and the financial costs of these natural disasters. According to the Federation's 2004 World Disaster Report, the economic cost of natural disasters has rocketed in recent years. Statistics show that the impacts vary considerably according to the level of human development attained in the countries where these disasters strike. In the past 2 decades alone, economic losses from natural disasters have multiplied fivefold to $629 billion. annual losses from weather-related events have increased in real terms from an estimated $4 billion in the 1950s to $63 billion in the 1990s. Now, if you adjust these for inflation, $4 billion in adjusted for inflation multiplied by 10 times equals $63 billion in the 1990s. Hey, boys and girls, are you telling me that it's better reporting between 1950 and 2005? No, boys and girls, I was alive back in 1950. We had television. We had radio. We had adding machines. We had people that could count. You know, the United States was full of people, coast to coast and border to border, keeping track of all the events that were going on. We knew when a hurricane hit Florida out in California. It was reported. This isn't better reporting, boys and girls. What we're facing here, these natural disasters are occurring 5 times more often than they did in times before that. Over the past 50 years. Now, economically industrialized countries tend to experience higher losses in dollar terms, but the impact as a proportion of the gross domestic product is much lower. For developing countries, disasters can cause serious setbacks to economic and social development. Now, according to the Federation's analysis, disasters in industrialized countries have inflicted an average of $318 million of damage per event, over 11 times higher than the $28 million per disaster in developing countries in the 1950s. This is hardly surprising when the expensive infrastructure of rich countries is taken into account, but the overall impact on the economies of rich countries in most cases is negligible. Hurricane Katrina is not negligible. It's about 4% of GDP. That's a big hit. But the GDP losses for individual events can be even more devastating. For instance, in Honduras in 1998, Hurricane Mitch caused losses equal to a staggering 41% of GDP. In terms of the government's annual tax revenue, the losses amounted to 292%, about 3 times their annual tax that they collect. So there's a very disproportionate hit that poor countries take. All right, let's think about this for a minute. People in Honduras are Roman Catholics. They worship the Pope. They do not practice the law of Moses. They don't practice the Ten Commandments. They're poor and they're undeveloped. And what's worse, when a hurricane like Mitch comes along, now surely God, you know, I'm talking about this God, the God of Abraham, must have known that the people of Honduras cannot take a Hurricane Mitch nearly as easily as the people of the United States. Now, how come he sent that hurricane over there and racked those Hondurans? These people are poor, and they're kept poor by these natural disasters. They're not only knocked down, they can't get up. They can't get up because it's going to take them 10 or 15 years to recover from that. And by the time they get recovered from that, another one will come along and knock them down again. It's like having your house burned down every so often. Now, we Americans haven't suffered that. We Anglo-Saxons have been spared from that. And that's because we Anglo-Saxons practiced more of the Mosaic Law more often than any other peoples in the world. And we got the blessings or the benefits that come from it. You know, there's a big benefit, a big blessing that comes to you by practicing this law. And when you violate this law, then of course there's some penalties. Sometimes those penalties are just kind of natural. They just kind of flow, like eating a McDonald's hamburger. You just keep eating that fat and there comes a point in time when that fat plugs up your arteries and you end up with a heart attack. That's not natural. That's a violation of a law. That's a direct cause and effect result. You know, you wring your nose, you get blood. You cut your hand, you get blood. There's no mystery about it. Now, because these poor countries do not practice the law of God, they keep getting knocked down. That's why they're poor. We who practiced the law of God in the past became wealthy and prosperous as a result of it. And as we turn our backs on the laws of God, slowly but surely, in an inexorable sequence of events, starting about 1950, as a matter of fact, in this country, about 1950, we have been on a slippery slope, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And as we throw God out of our public schools and bring the sodomites in, we get poorer and poorer results in our politics, in our economics, in our social life, in the riots that occur in the crime and the natural disasters, as we like to call them. Little by little, all of these events keep mounting up. You notice that? If you haven't, you haven't been paying attention. Well, let me give you a reminder here at the halfway point, and we'll take a look at some of these laws over here that we've been violating, and I'll show you how to turn this truck around. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school is a free, or has, or offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct 417-273-4967. All right, in one of my schools, the Mosaic Law School, I like to start off with a random test. And so I have a test that I formulated many years ago, and I have 25 questions. And good Baptists, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, Lutherans, and Mormons, they come in, and they take that test, and they all score about the same. I don't care whether you're a Catholic, Protestant, or a Jew. I don't care what your religious background or ethnicity is. You're all going to score right at 4. I'm going to ask you 25 questions. And out of those 25 questions, you're going to get 4 of them. And what the 25 questions are questions concerning the law. Do you practice the Passover? And most of you people will say, no. No, I don't. Do you practice Easter? Yes. Yes, I do. So most people practice Easter. They do not practice the Passover. Most people practice Christmas. They do not practice the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay? There's no hard feelings there. Don't want you to think that I'm trying to get you converted to Judaism here. I just wanted to point out that when you take the test, if you're average, you're going to score 4. Now that's 16%. Now there are 133 of these laws in the Bible. Now, if you score 16% of 133 laws, I haven't done this, and let me just do this, 133 times 0.16, that means that you're going to practice about 21 of the laws of the Bible. If you're an average, run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety religious person, if you're non-religious, you may score lower than that. But if you're a religious guy, go to church every Sunday and do all the things that good religious people do, you're going to score around 21%. I'll give you a little benefit of the doubt, and we'll call it a quarter. About 25% of the laws of the Bible you're going to practice. Now, ask yourself this question. If you had an employee that followed about 25% of your instructions, would you keep him as an employee? Would you promote him? Would you give him a raise? An employee who follows 25% of your instructions, would you keep him? Would you promote him? Would you give him a raise? I wouldn't. I would fire him. I would demote him. I would terminate him. I'd get rid of him. I wouldn't have him around. And that's 25%. Now, I'm an old-timey employer, and I know that my employees are not going to follow my instructions 100% of the time. And I wouldn't fire an employee because he violated one of my instructions once in a while. Or even maybe two or three or five or nine of my instructions from time to time. And especially if I didn't catch him all the time and etc. But if I had an employee that couldn't follow my instructions at least 90% of the time, he would have a hard time staying in my organization. And that's 90%. So, I'm not telling you what God's program is, because I don't know. God doesn't talk to me. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a preacher. I didn't go to seminary. All I know is what I read in the papers. It's like, just like old Will Rogers. All I know is what I read here in the Bible, but I ain't brain dead. I can sit here and read Leviticus 26. I can see what the guy's telling me. Maybe he's lying to me. Maybe it isn't true. Maybe the Bible's a piece of trash and I ought not paying attention to it. But I'm just raising the question, well, what if it is true? And what if this guy doesn't mean what he says? And after all, you guys have been praying to your God, and he didn't stop Katrina, and he didn't stop that earthquake. He didn't stop that tsunami out there in the Indian Ocean. Even if he didn't cause it, he didn't stop it. And that Hurricane Mitch down there in Honduras, hey, you Catholics down there, surely you must have been praying mighty hard to the Virgin Mary down there now, weren't you? And the Virgin Mary didn't do much to stop Hurricane Mitch, and it cost you a bundle. Now, you know, with friends like that, you don't need too many enemies. So I'm of the opinion here that we're violating some laws. So get your pen and paper out here, boys and girls. I'm going to point out some laws here. Pretty easy, straightforward laws that we violate every day as Americans. Now, you can't change much in the way of segregation and integration, but in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9, is a prohibition against integration. Integration. Segregation is the order of law created by God Himself. Now, here in America, segregation is equated with discrimination. Discrimination is a violation of the law of God. It's against the law of God to treat a stranger any differently than you would a homeborn. They're called strangers, and it comes under the stranger's law. But that doesn't mean that we're to integrate with them. Chinese are pretty good people, and you'll notice the Chinese all live over here in Chinatown. Japanese and Orientals all do that. They all segregate themselves. They just do it naturally. And do you notice that here in America, we don't have any problems with the Chinese, the Orientals? If there is, I haven't heard about it. I used to live with them in Oakland, California. We practiced segregation. The Chinese lived in Chinatown, and the rest of us lived in the rest of town. And they conducted their business, and we'd go down to Chinatown, eat in their restaurants, and buy their stuff. And they did business with us, but we didn't live together, and we didn't make marriages with them. And they didn't make any marriages with us. Anytime that you try to practice integration, you're going to have problems, boys and girls. That's just natural law. And it just so happens that God prohibited it in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. Christmas. Most people in America practice Christmas. It's a violation of Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. Christmas is a pagan holiday. And in Leviticus chapter 23, God says, these are my holy days, and he lists seven. And he says, I want you to practice these holy days. We don't. And that causes hard feelings between God, who is a jealous God, and us, because we're giving him the finger. Pork. It's against the law to eat pig. Health reasons. Leviticus 11 verse 7 tells you don't eat pig. I didn't write it. Don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you this God is opposed to eating pig. Maybe your God is all in favor of eating pig. But remember, your God couldn't stop Hurricane Katrina. This guy says he can. Easter is a violation of Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. Easter is a pagan holiday. Easter is against the law. You practice Easter. Interracial marriage is a violation of Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 11, and Ezra 10, verse 10. It's against the law to marry outside of your race. Unjust weights and balances. It's a violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Unjust weights, unjust balances are Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, stocks and bonds, and commercial paper. Witchcraft is a violation of the law of God. Punishable by death, by the way. It's a capital felony. It violates Leviticus 20, verse 27. There's a number of other statutes that it violates. I won't cover all the statutes, just one or two. Witchcraft. We practice that every Halloween. We practice it with every Mardi Gras. It's against the law. Sodomy violates Leviticus 20, verse 13. We've made it a civil right. It's a capital felony, punishable by death. Abortion. Violates Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. Abortion is the law of the land. We call it Roe v. Wade. Adultery. Adultery is a violation of Exodus 20, verse 14. On planet Earth, we have sexual relations. There is no such thing as sexual relations on planet Earth outside of marriage. So if you missed that, on planet Earth, there's no such thing as sexual relations outside of marriage. So when you're having sexual relations, and it isn't with your wife, that's a crime. That's also a capital felony. Usury. You've probably got a mortgage on your house. You probably have car payments on your car. It's called interest. It's a violation of Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. It's against the law for you to participate in, to practice, to be an accessory before, to be an accessory after the fact, and pay usury or accept it. It's against the law. Voting. It violates Exodus 20, verse 3. It's idolatry. I want to point out that this God, I can't speak for Allah, I can't speak for Jesus, I can't speak for Buddha, I can't speak for Amun-Ra. I'm just telling you, this God here says he ain't putting up with idolatry. This God ain't a Democrat. This guy ain't running for public office. And when he comes back, he's not going to come knocking on your door saying, will you please vote for me? What he told you was, you're going to bow your knee to me. And if you don't, I'm going to break your damn legs. This guy is an autocratic dictator. We're not talking about sweet Jesus away in the manger. We ain't talking about love. We're talking about a guy that says, this is the way things are going to run. And if you give me any static, I'm going to eat your lunch. And boys and girls, that's what's happening. So when I point out voting, I'm just pointing out that this guy isn't running for office. He's not asking for your vote. He's not asking for your support. He doesn't care whether you approve or disapprove of his agenda. He's simply telling you this is the agenda This is what you're going to do. You're either going to get in line or you're not. And if you don't, I'll kill you, and then that'll be the end of the problem. Let me assure you that he solved the Egyptian problem in the middle of the Red Sea. When our boys got over to the other side, there was no more Egyptian problem. Now, if that's the only way the Egyptians can learn, then that's the way the Egyptians are going to learn. He has another story that he tells. He says, when he comes back, he's going to establish the Feast of Tabernacles. And he said, if the Egyptians won't come up to the Feast of Tabernacles, it isn't going to rain in Egypt until they do. And you know, the people in Egypt may never come up to the Feast of Tabernacles, which just means there's going to be a lot of vacant real estate if they don't. Because I don't think those people can live down there without rain. And he said, it ain't raining in Egypt until they come up. They're coming to Jerusalem. So all you Egyptians down there in Cairo, you are going to walk. I guess you could take a bus. But you're going up to Jerusalem. I guess 265 miles, if I remember right. 265 miles. You're going up to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. That's when the Messiah returns. And if you give him any static in the process, he'll break your legs. There isn't going to be any Palestine Liberation Organization. You know, I watch TV and I watch the Palestinians over there, and I say to myself, I wonder what God would do. I mean, the God of Moses. I wonder how would Moses and God have handled the Palestinians if there was a problem that the Jews and the Palestinians are having today? Has anybody got a clue as to how he'd handle it? Well, let me tell you how he handled it when the Israelites arrived in Palestine. There were seven major nations there. There were the Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, and three or four others. And he destroyed all seven of them and eliminated the problem. I've often wondered why it is that the Jews are totally impotent and unable to deal with this Palestinian problem. Because if they followed the scripture, there would not be any Palestinian problem, I can assure you. If they followed the scripture. Now, of course, the Jews don't follow the scripture, so they got nothing but problems. It's against the law to eat blood. Here in America, we don't eat it. We mainline it. We call it blood transfusions. That violates Leviticus 7, verses 26 and 27. Fat, it's against the law to eat fat. That violates Leviticus 3, verse 17. That means all those McDonald's places. Now, McDonald's, you know, could serve hamburger. Hamburger's not against the law. It's just that 30% fat in the hamburger. I grind up meat here once in a while, and I have hamburger without any fat. Costs a lot more. Oh, yeah, costs a lot more. I produce animals here without fat. See, most cattle have fat, 25% to be exact. 25% fat. They call them fat cattle. Guess that's why they call them fat cattle, because they get fat. And, of course, people don't walk into the supermarket and say, gee, I'd like to buy 5 pounds of fat today. And because of that, the slaughterhouse has 25% fat that they need to do something with. So they went to the legislature and said, we got to have a place to put our fat. So we want legislation that prohibits putting more than 30% fat into the hamburger. Notice how they worded that? We want legislation that prohibits putting more than. We don't want legislation that permits us to put 30% fat in. We want a positive law that prohibits more than 30% fat. So that gives us permission to put it up to 30% fat. And we don't need more than 25. Isn't that just real special? That way they can get rid of the fat. It's kind of like fluoride in the aluminum industry. It was a toxic waste, and so they went to the legislature and said, what we need to do is put this in the water supply. But if we say we got this toxic waste and it's a hazardous waste and it costs a lot of money to dispose of it, that's going to be expensive. Let's sell it to people. Let's tell them that it prevents tooth decay. They'll love it. They'll want it. They will pay for it. They will fight over it. That's why we have fluoride in our water. We had to have a place to get rid of this toxic waste. Public school violates Deuteronomy 4, verses 9 and 10. And the census violates 2 Samuel 24, verses 1 through 25. And then you've got an inheritance tax that violates Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. And then you have birthdays. Birthdays violate Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, and Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1. And then we have unclean meats. Remember we had pork up here, number 3. That violated Leviticus 11, verse 7. Well, there are unclean meats that violates Deuteronomy 14 and Leviticus 11. Two chapters. And there are certain birds that are unclean. There are certain fish that are unclean. There are certain animals that are unclean. Doesn't have anything to do with ceremonies. Has everything to do with your health. Preachers say, well, these are ceremonial laws. Okay. Even if they were ceremonial laws, they're still obligatory upon you. Jesus told you plainly. He said, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. Not one law ever enacted in the scripture by God Almighty has ever been repealed. Not a single law is repealed. None. Zero. Zilch. And that preacher, that pulpit parrot that told you that the law was abolished and done away with, is a liar. He is a wolf in sheep's clothing. A false prophet. And what's the penalty for false prophets? They should be taken out and stoned to death. And I'm talking about marijuana. They need to be stoned. But not with any good stuff. Mixed fabric clothes. That's where you go in and you buy clothes and they're 35% cotton and 25% nylon and 15% of something else. Mixed fabric clothes. That violates Leviticus 19, verse 19. Unisex clothes. That was a rage here a few years ago. They had boys dressing up in these unisex clothes. So you couldn't tell them from the girls. Kind of like Tootsie. I saw Tootsie and I said, God, that woman's really good looking, ain't she? I was down in New Orleans. I got to tell one on myself. I was down in New Orleans, you know. And I saw this woman go by and she was pretty striking. And I think she was striking because she looked like a tart. And as she went by, there was just something about her, you know, that caught my eye. And I turned around and I watched her walk by. She's kind of swinging her ass, you know, like she knew what she was doing. And I looked at that, and my wife said, what are you looking at? And I said, I'm looking at that woman. She said, that's not a woman. That's a transvestite. I said, you got to be kidding me. No. She said, it's a man. I said, how can you tell? I guess women just have that gift. I couldn't tell. I remember when I was a kid, you know, we used to have a bar called the Ritz down on F Street between 2nd and 3rd Street. And one of my uncles during World War II went into the bar, him and another guy. They used to work 6 days a week in those days, you know. They worked Monday through Saturday, took Sunday off. Of course, these guys ain't religious and they got other things to do on Sunday, so they happened to hit the bar there Saturday night. And there are a couple of good-looking women in there, and so they went over and hit on these women, and they're over there sitting in the booth, and you know, one thing leads to another, and old Lyle, you know, was reaching his hand up her dress a little bit, and reaching his hand up her dress a little more, and pretty soon got up there to where pay dirt was, and he was just kind of surprised because he said, "Why, you dirty!" And I won't finish the expletive deleted. And he grabbed this woman and punched her out right there in the middle of the Ritz. Need I say any more? Fooled my Uncle Lyle. By God, he was a little ticked off, too, let me tell you. So, anyway, unisex clothes used to be the rage over here. That violates Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. Bestiality, that's sexual relations with animals, that violates Exodus 22, verse 19. New Year's, January 1st, that violates Isaiah 1, verses 13 and 14. Idolatry violates Deuteronomy 5, verse 7. Idolatry, that has to do with worship. That has to do with obedience to foreign and alien gods, like following the law of the United States. Canada, Australia, instead of following the law of God. And as you can see here, I'm down on number 26. See, we're following the laws of the United States. I mean, you've got your identification papers in order. You got your driver's license, registration, proof of insurance. Your tax returns are filled out and you do all those things. I mean, you obey the law of your God. But you don't obey the law of this God. And that's the problem. Sabbath breaking violates Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through 15. Prostitution, there'll be no whores of the daughters of Israel. If prostitution, you know, is an industry. We call them sex workers in this country. We haven't quite legalized them yet, but in many countries they're legalized, like Holland. That violates Deuteronomy 23, verses 17 and 18. But let me tell you, boys and girls, what we haven't legalized, we certainly tolerate. We tolerate it. We use chemical fertilizers in violation of Leviticus 25, 1 through 7. We have our Congress making laws for us in violation of Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, Deuteronomy 5, verse 31, Deuteronomy 7, verse 11. We buy insurance in violation of Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. We violate the quarantine law. We've got all of these people that are infected with AIDS running around in our society. The only country in the world that I know of that practices quarantine, according to the Bible, is Cuba. The quarantine laws contained in Numbers 5, verses 1 through 4. And then we take oaths. You ever notice when you go into court, you raise your right hand and swear an oath? That's prohibited in James 5, 12 and Matthew 5, 33. Social Security is a violation of Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And then identification violates Jeremiah 10, verse 2 and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. You know, that's why there's always been in the United States a great debate over the government identification. Hey, we're right on the cusp of having national identification laws here in the United States. You've got them most of the places in the world. Did you know that God Almighty has told us not to submit to these national identification schemes? Kind of crazy, huh? And then you've got lotteries and gambling and marriage and divorce and childbirth and medical doctors and healing and medicine and evolution in your public schools and sex education in schools. The total is 82 at last count. Out of 133 laws here in the United States, we Americans violate 82. The average Joe Sixpack is practicing 25% of the law. 25%. So if you took 51 and divided that by 133, our government's a little bit ahead of us. We're practicing, as a nation, 38% of the laws of God. If you had an employee that would follow your instructions 38% of the time, would you keep him? Would you promote him? Would you give him a raise? Can you see why the God of Abraham is a little ticked off? Why it is that we're getting punished? 38%. I would contend, tain't quite enough. Hey, we're about out of time. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We'll have a new subject starting next week. We start our weeks on Sunday. And we will be back with something new. I don't know what it is tonight, but it'll be something. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, health, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening. And until then, good night, friends.